Today is Tuesday, February 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. President is scheduled to make a major address to the U.S. Congress tonight. The budget is expected to be a major theme.
This budget follows through on my promise to focus on keeping Americans safe, keeping out terrorists, keeping out criminals, and putting violent offenders behind bars or removing them from our country altogether.
Hear a preview of the speech in a moment. Also ahead, there's been another spate of anti-Semitic threats in the United States. We take a deeper look at what's going on. And a private company has plans to send two civilians around the moon next year, all on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump will address a joint session of Congress and the American people Tuesday in his first major speech since his inauguration last month. Trump is expected to talk about his budget priorities for the coming year, including a big boost in defense spending and cuts in foreign aid programs and domestic spending. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has a preview from Washington.
President Trump gave a preview of his speech before Congress during a meeting with state governors at the White House.
This budget follows through on my promise to focus on keeping Americans safe, keeping out terrorists, keeping out criminals, and putting violent offenders behind bars or removing them from our country altogether.
In addition to boosting defense spending and cutting domestic programs, lawmakers also hope to hear more from the president on tax reform and health care, says analyst John Fortier.
But he and Congress broadly agree on repealing Obamacare and a tax cut and border security and regulatory reform. So those are the kinds of things he's going to have to bring his Republican colleagues together on.
Democrats seem to be more in a mood to resist many of the president's initiatives, and that includes the new party chairman, former Labor Secretary Tom Perez.
Donald Trump, you do not stand for America. Donald Trump, we will not allow those values to divide America, and that is what we will do as a party, leading with our values.
At numerous congressional town halls in recent days, anger over Trump and feared health care changes have been on display, including this one hosted by Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell.
Veterans are sick. The veterans are broken down. They're not getting what they need.
President Trump also seems primed for battle, not only with Democrats, but with the news media.
And we have to fight it, folks. We have to fight it. They're very smart, they're very cunning, and they're very dishonest.
Some Republicans see the attacks on the media as an unnecessary distraction. But it's also part of the president's unpredictable nature, says Republican strategist John Fury.
He's unpredictable on purpose. This has been his sole strategy. And that's a sea change for most presidents who have tried to be earnestly predictable. And so this really is upsetting the apple cart. I think it's going to take a while for congressional leaders to figure out how to deal with this.
Trump may also use his congressional address to reassure voters after what has been at times a chaotic start to his presidency, and to try to boost his poll ratings, which remain at a low point for a new president. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Coverage of the president's speech begins at 2 hours Universal Time on VOA platforms. Make sure you tune in. Andrew Palshevsky joins us now with a look at social media. How many people are talking about what the president's about to say?
It's starting to build as the speech gets closer. There's a lot of anticipation, a lot of questions about what President Trump might talk about in this speech and how he might do it. Of course, he's quite well known for going off script, going off the teleprompter and kind of ad-libbing. So there's some questions about how well he'll stick to the script. But ahead of the speech, President Trump is getting great grades from President Trump. He went on the Fox and Friends morning show today and said that he gave himself an A-plus for effort, a C or C-plus for messaging.
Now, that's interesting.
That is interesting, and yeah, an A for achievement. So now, depending on what side of the aisle you're on, what side of the political spectrum, you're praising these A-pluses, saying, of course, it's an A-plus. He's doing great and getting A's. Some jokes at the C, C-plus, and some surprise, too, that he gave such an honest assessment about the messaging, which has been an issue.
I have never heard him publicly give himself less than an A on anything.
Right.
I mean, and that's part of his personality. That's not to downgrade him or anything like that, but he's downgrading himself.
No, he's yeah. very keen on talking about winning and doing well and success. So for to hear him speak bluntly about the messaging, again, where he has, as many people know, had some issues getting the messaging out, is interesting. So a lot of people jumping on that as well.
So we'll see who gets fired as far as the messaging unit is concerned. What else you got here?
Well, very quickly, we talked yesterday about the Academy Award mix-up with Best Picture. Well, it looks like, according to reports, the PricewaterhouseCooper accountant in charge of handing out the envelopes was distracted because he was tweeting a picture of Emma Stone holding her Oscar for Best Actress, and that is apparently why he handed out the wrong envelope. So don't tweet and Oscar.
Surprise, surprise, surprise. Andrew Palchesky with social media. Among the top stories in the world, White House officials are promising President Trump's first address to Congress this evening will be grounded firmly in solving real problems for real people. President Trump is blaming his predecessor, former President Barack Obama, for recent protests against Republican lawmakers meeting with voters in their home states during a congressional recess. Malaysia's attorney general says two women arrested in connection with the killing of the half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will be charged Wednesday with murder. Somalia's new president has declared a state of disaster as the Horn of Africa nation struggles with a severe drought and food crisis. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The most popular theory on how the moon was formed is called the giant impact hypothesis. According to this proposition, our moon was made from the debris left over from a violent collision about 4.5 billion years ago between Earth and a Mars-sized protoplanet. Now, a group of Israeli scientists have developed a new theory that suggests the moon we now see in the night sky is not Earth's first and only moon, but that there were actually a number of moons that preceded it throughout our planet's history. The group's findings suggest that each in the series of moons that circled ancient Earth were formed from different collisions with the still-forming planet. One of the study's co-authors say that it was likely that these moonlets were either ejected into space, that they crashed into Earth, or with each other to form bigger moons. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Jewish community centers and schools in at least 11 U.S. states reported getting bomb threats Monday, the fifth wave of such threats this year that have stoked fears of a resurgence of anti-Semitism. These threats, all of which appear to be hoaxes, were received in Alabama, Delaware, Florida, Indiana, Maryland, Michigan, New York, New Jersey, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Virginia. For some centers, it was the second or third time this year that they've been forced to put their threat evacuation drill into practice. Jewish groups, President Donald Trump, Israeli officials have all condemned the surge in disruptive intimidation as well as the vandalism of Jewish cemeteries. Police said on Sunday that about 100 headstones had been toppled at a Jewish cemetery in Philadelphia about a week after a similar act of vandalism at a Jewish cemetery in St. Louis. We welcome to International Edition Maurice Samuels. Professor Samuels specializes in the literature and culture of 19th century France and in Jewish studies at Yale. He also directs the Yale program for the study of anti-Semitism. Welcome, Professor. You know, a few years ago, you participated in a panel discussion at Yale that asked the question, anti-Semitism today, what's causing it and what, if anything, can we do about it? Well, I'm asking those same questions to you today, especially in light of what's happened over the past few weeks or so.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. You know, anti-Semitism is coming from a variety of different sources now. I think for a number of years, since about the year 2000, we've been very aware of the threat coming from the Muslim community, and this is especially in France, where the area that I work on. But it turns out that the kind of older form of anti-Semitism coming from, you know, the far right is not dead at all. And in fact, I think we're seeing a, if not a resurgence from that area, at least an emboldening of those groups.
But the question is why?
Yeah, why? That is the question. You know, certainly events in the Middle East, I think, are often a trigger for anti-Semitism coming from Muslim groups. What's triggering this latest surge from right-wing groups? Hard to say. I have a feeling that a lot of that animosity was probably already there, and these people are feeling more willing to, you know, speak out about it now.
Well, you know, we're kind of, you know, hedging on the question here, and I won't hedge anymore. According to the Anti-Defamation League, the number of violent anti-Semitic assaults taking place in the U.S. rose dramatically last year, contributing now to a 3% rise in the total number of anti-Jewish incidents reported in 2015. Last night, my colleague Lori London spoke with the ADL CEO Jonathan Greenblatt, who thanked both President Trump and Vice President Pence for taking stands against anti-Semitism over the past week, but said the president had not acted soon enough.
It took Mr. Trump far too long to speak out forcefully. The image of him shouting down an Orthodox Jewish reporter in the East Room is one that caused white supremacists and neo-Nazis to celebrate. And the failure to speak out sooner has created a vacuum, I believe, that really emboldened the anti-Semites and allowed their bigotry to really move from the margins into the mainstream. Now, as I said a minute ago, it's great that he spoke out, but now we need to move beyond words.
Professor Samuel, how do we move beyond these words?
The first thing that I think needs to be done is that the FBI needs to get to the bottom of who is carrying out these threats against Jewish community centers all over the country and who has desecrated these cemeteries. That's the first thing. And once we get to the bottom of that, then I think we'll know a little bit more who, you know, how to stop it once we know who the perpetrators are. But certainly a more forceful condemnation from President Trump, I think, is absolutely necessary. I think a lot of people are sensing that it's a kind of too little, too late approach, and that you know, he's not doing enough, I think, to condemn what is really an act of terrorism against the Jewish community, or a threat of terrorism against the Jewish community. This is a president who says that he's going to stop terrorism, and that's one of his main platforms, and this is terrorism, and he needs to stop it.
Is this anti-Semitism? Are these attacks overall just limited to Jews?
No, I think it's important to point out that many groups are feeling threatened right now, especially Muslims, I think, especially Mexicans, especially all kinds of immigrants. And I think that it's wrong to single out Jews as the as in danger now. When one of these groups is in danger, I think we're all in danger. And I think that that's one of the lessons that we can draw from history, and that it's one of the important things to keep in mind now is that this is a fight that involves everybody.
Another troubling finding from the ADL report is anti-Semitic incidents at colleges and university had nearly doubled last year. What's behind this, do you think?
Well, anti-Semitism on campus is a problem that a lot of scholars have been very concerned about, partially because it's where we live. I think a lot of that has come from, is related to politics of the Middle East, a kind of rising anti-Zionism on college campuses. And I think that there's not often enough attention given to the many ways that anti-Semitism becomes a cover, sorry, that anti-Zionism becomes a cover for anti-Semitism. And I think that one of the things that one of the goals of the program that I run, the Yale Program for the Study of Antisemitism, is to educate people on where that line lies and how important it is to be careful about how these issues are debated on college campuses.
Professor Maurice Samuel specializes in the literature and culture of 19th century France and in Jewish studies at Yale. He directs the Yale Program for the Study of Antisemitism. Professor, I thank you so much for being with us and spending some time and imparting the information.
Well, thank you.
We continue on International Edition. The private U.S.-based Space Exploration Technologies Corporation, known as SpaceX, says it's planning to launch at least two passengers on a tourist trip around the moon as early as late 2018. The CEO of the company, Elon Musk, declined to reveal the identities of the passengers or how much they paid, except to say the deposit was substantial. It would represent the first privately funded journey beyond Earth's orbit with a tentative flight plan that includes a trip of up to 640,000 kilometers from Earth past the moon and back for a parachute landing. The trajectory would be similar to that of the U.S. NASA Apollo lunar missions. Independent Australian space analyst Maurice Jones told VOA's Victor Beatty the rocket will likely be SpaceX's Falcon Heavy rocket, which is scheduled to make a debut test flight later this year.
Falcon Heavy uses the same type of rocket stages and engine, but it basically puts three stages together, almost like a cricket wicket, to give you extra power during launch.
Is the timeline of late 2018 for this first mission rather ambitious in your view?
I think it's too ambitious, and I really don't think that they're going to meet that deadline. Or if they try to meet that deadline, they'll end up compromising on safety. I think they really didn't think it out well enough.
Elon Musk, the CEO of SpaceX, said he thinks there's a market for one or two of these missions each year.
I think that there are a lot of very rich people out there in the world who would really love to fly to the moon. So I think when he talks about a market for these services, it's not a very large market, but it could be enough for, say, half a dozen flights over a decade.
Would these be similar to the NASA Apollo missions that went to the moon and back?
These are going to be far less ambitious than the Apollo mission. They won't land on the moon. They won't even go into orbit around the moon. What they will do is they will fly what's known as a free return trajectory, where you head out to the moon, you fly around the far side of the moon, and you use the moon's gravity to throw the spacecraft back to Earth. The crew of Apollo 13 did this to get back to Earth quickly in an emergency. And the whole flight will take roughly a week.
He says that there will be extensive training involved. What kind of training would the passengers have to go through?
I think a lot of it will mirror some of the training that conventional astronauts go through, in the sense that they'll be thrown through weightlessness training and acceleration and maybe a bit of survival training. The main difference is that they will not need to learn how to pilot the spacecraft. The spacecraft will be piloted automatically and probably with some updates from ground control. They'll need to know how to take care of themselves and their personal needs in space, eating, going to the bathroom. But all things considered, it won't take a lot of training, I feel, to get ready for a mission like this.
Maurice Jones said he believes such trips around the moon could cost about $50 million per passenger, although the cost would eventually go down. Elon Musk, whose company is planning to first launch manned flights to the International Space Station, has indicated his long-term goal is to prepare for eventual human flights to Mars, and the lunar flights represent an interim step to that. This is VOA.
Do you love music from Africa and the world? VOA has the latest hits, interviews with the artists, and we are glad to take your requests. The Voice of America has what you're looking for. We have music shows to please everyone. Join us on the radio or on the internet to listen day or night. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on your favorite program. Just follow your ears. Music from Africa and the world. We've got it on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
We continue on International Edition, a new six-hour series by PBS. The U.S. Public Broadcasting Service attempts a monumental task to reveal the truth of 200,000 years of history on the African continent, from the origins of human civilization to the threshold of the modern world. This, according to acclaimed historian and series executive producer Henry Louis Gates, Jr., who takes viewers on a journey to explore the vast contributions by Africans that have shaped the continent and the world.
American historian and filmmaker Henry Louis Gates Jr. wants you to rethink your lessons on African history.
We in the West have created a fiction of Africa as isolated, static, and completely cut off. Nothing could be further from the truth.
In this preview of PBS's new six-hour series, Africa's Great Civilizations, Gates takes on a show-and-tell myth-busting tour covering 200,000 years of African history, from its origins and earliest empires to advanced commercial and manufacturing centers and colonial exploitation, the clash of civilizations. Those who attended a preview screening at New York's Council on Foreign Relations say the film sparks personal revelations that Western-centric history books sometimes fail to mention.
My understanding was the reason that there was so little about Africa in history was that, you know, there was nothing written, there was no records, it was all oral, it was, you know, there weren't really these great civilizations anyway. And it's really interesting how people are now finding ways to shine a light on these things in ways that, you know, qualifies history.
In one episode, Gates takes us through the continent's empires of gold, bringing to life the economic prowess of the West African Mali Empire and its 14th century emperor.
It's often claimed that Mansa Musa is the richest man who has ever lived.
Most people's notion of Africa is much more recent. It's more about slavery and colonialism and some of the challenges that the continent has faced over the last several decades. But I think what the film does and what the series does is to connect today and where Africa is today with its past and its history.
Appenteng adds that for future African civilizations to prosper, human capital must be developed to its full potential.
The whole world has a huge stake in Africa really being successful. A lot of the talent, I think, is going to be on the African continent.
Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
That's going to wrap up our program for today. You've been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our thanks to Director Patrice Martin, our engineer John Dryden. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and European Union continue to share similar goals to promote peace and prosperity through freedom, democracy, and the rule of law. And to those objectives, said Vice President Mike Pence on a trip to Brussels, we will remain committed. The United States and EU economies are the world's largest, accounting for half of the world's economic output. Transatlantic commerce and travel for business and tourism support 14 million jobs on both continents and improve the lives and well-being of all of our citizens. We reaffirm our commitment to free, fair, and flourishing economies that undergird our success and to cooperate in achieving that, said Vice President Pence. When it comes to terrorism, said the Vice President, we must be strong and we must be united in our efforts to confront threats to Europe's security and stability. This will require greater coordination and intelligence sharing among EU member states and between the EU and the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. In addition to confronting terrorism together, clearly we must stand strong in defense of the sovereignty and territorial integrity of nations in Europe, in the wake of Russian efforts to redraw international borders by force. We will continue to support efforts in Poland and the Baltic states through NATO's Enhanced Forward Presence Initiative, said the Vice President. And with regard to Ukraine, the United States will continue to hold Russia accountable and demand that Russia honor the Minsk agreements, beginning by de-escalating the violence in eastern Ukraine. At the same time, the United States will search for new common ground with Russia, which President Trump believes can be found. The United States' commitment to the EU is steadfast and enduring. We are separated by an ocean, said Vice President Pence, but we are joined by a common commitment to freedom, to democracy, and to the rule of law, and we're confident that that bond will endure and grow.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. for a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.